Did you say step five? Sorry, I missed that. Step six. Okay,
I don't know
great.
why I'm giving you hand signals. I could have just said six. I don't know what's going
Yeah.
on here.
So you're all right with us recording? We will be recording the speaker portion of this meeting.
You bet.
Then,
Happy to oblige. It's all
okay,
good.
great. So take it away.
All right. Hi, everybody. I'm Pat. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and I'm very glad to be here with you guys today. Anytime we fellowship, anytime that we have a chance to just talk through what our experience is with this program, what God's doing in each of our lives, I think it's incredible. Step six and step seven have been wrongly called in some of the rooms around 12-step fellowships. They're like the forgotten steps. You hear about steps four and five, you hear about steps 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12, but it's sort of like, what do you do with that paragraph, two paragraphs covering two steps? And if you think about it, step one covers approximately 54 pages of the 103 pages of instruction. So why is it that they have such a little itty bitty bit on step six and seven? And my contention is that step six is really 76 pages long. Step six is 76 pages long, and step seven is really 100 and is up from 76 all the way to 103, actually all the way to 164. Because see, I learn a new way of living. And step one, whatever our addiction is, we get to the place where the book, in a merciful, grace-filled, loving way, basically tells me I am hopeless. I don't have control over it physically, mentally, and spiritually is driving everything. That the spiritual malady is really the culprit. It's really the thing that is hurting and harming me, hurting and harming others. That's the problem. Step four tells us on page 62 that if I could overcome this spiritual malady, I'm going to straighten out mentally and physically. That's a promise in the big book. But if I don't overcome the spiritual malady, I'm never going to straighten out mentally and physically. And I am going to be living, waiting for that other shoe to drop, waiting for the ball to drop, waiting for the house of cards to fall, because I don't have control over my addiction. And one day, somehow, some way, cunning, baffling, and powerful, it's going to get me. Now, I have no defense. My only defense is to be in a loving, infinite, wonderful relationship with God. And we are called to that relationship beginning in step one with Dr. Silkworth and Dr. Roland ha and Dr. Young. Silkworth says, hey, Bill, if you don't get an entire psychic change, you're going to die, go insane, or be locked up. Dr. Young, his information back over to Roland Hazard was much the same. If you don't have a vital spiritual experience, Roland, you're going to die. You're going to be locked up. You're not going to be able to go around because there is nothing that doctors this side of eternity can do for you. There's nothing, Silkworth said to Bill. Silky said, Bill, or to Lois actually, says, there's nothing I could do. I've been trying to apply the powers of good, which we know is the power of God, into their lives, and we couldn't do it. See, we have synthetic imitation approaches to try to manage our spiritual malady. We know our triggers. We do cognitive behavioral therapy, which, by the way, I'm not against any of this stuff, but they're management tools. And they're not going to be effective unless I've had a deep and effective spiritual experience deep down inside. So in step two, it tells me really clearly that my problem is that I can't find power. And the other problem I have is that I'm agnostic. I don't even believe I could access that power that I need so badly to live. And that's a real dilemma. Man, I'm that one person that no one could help. I'm that one person that I can't get free. I'll never be able to figure it out. And the beautiful thing about step two is we're just asked for two. We're starting to build this beautiful spiritual structure. We learn on page 17 what our addiction and problem is. common problem and common solution. That's what we're going to join together in brotherly and harmonious, you know, action, right? And so on page 42 or on page 42, we get a chance to take a look at our spiritual malady. And we get at the beginning of it is that cornerstone. And we say, I am willing. God hereafter is going to be everything. And I'm going to try to pursue this conscious contact with my newfound friend that Bill talks about, and it's going to be God. Step three tells me that I'm building more and more the spiritual edifice. And in the end of step, or just before we take the third step prayer, it tells me the keystone is what I need. The keystone. I'm now willing to believe that God is everything. But the keystone is, God, hereafter in this drama called life, I'm no longer in charge. You're going to be my principal, father, director, creator, and employer. You're going to be everything that I need to function in life. You're going to be it. I'm going to get my guidance from you. I'm going to get my safety and protection from you. I'm going to get my authority for representing you in what all areas of my life. I'm no longer representing myself. And for once and for all, I've taken myself out of the center of that circle and the triangle, and I'm no longer trying to run life to suit myself. I'm done. Playing God for Pat didn't work. So I go into 4 and 5, and sorry for this long introduction, but it's important that we touch on these things before we hit 6. And on 4, you know, I search fearlessly, and I'm thorough in all of the stuff going on in my life that's got me jammed up, my resentments, my fears, my motives in relationship, my belief systems, my deep founded, I will fight to the death for actions and behaviors and beliefs that I am never going to give up. And I find from that step three prayer that really what's going on is I got to be freed from the bondage, the imprisonment of self. And that if I'm not freed from this bondage of self, I will never be okay. Being freed from the bondage of self is having the spiritual malady overcome. That's really what that means. My core, my disease is selfish self-centeredness. I miss the mark. In religious terms, it's called sin. It simply means I'm living for myself. I'm not living for God. And I'm making a mess out of my life because I think I'm God. I applied for the job. I got an interview. I got a dress rehearsal and I got a chance to show my stuff. You know what? I fire myself. I have to fire myself. I'm pathetic at playing God. I can't believe it. My pride and my ego says, what do you mean you can't play God? Let's try it again. We'll try it again. It'll be all right. This time it'll work. And so that step three, that conversation we have from page 60 to 63 is basically telling me everything that you try to do on your own turns into a problem. You are Pat, self-will run riot. There's nothing that you're doing that's going to work out. You are the producer of chaos. You are the producer of confusion. You are the producer of conflict. That's what you bring to the table, Pat. Not somebody else. What? Me? I'm not responsible. They are. And I got to see it. And I can't see it. That's why I go into my step four experience. And I hold to the death my wrongs that people have done to me in that column three. I say, you know what? You guys have wronged me. I have deep-seated beliefs about how my self-esteem, my pride, my ambition, my security, my personal sex relations and pocketbook should be. And I am convinced you wronged me. I'm not the problem. You are. And I don't see the role that I've created until I turn the page and I do that realization. I go, oh my gosh, I'm not the victim here. I'm the perpetrator. I'm not the one that's being taken advantage of. I'm the one attempting to take advantage of everyone and everything to suit me. And now I put myself in a position to be harmed. And I'm driven. I finally found out in that fourth column, 100 forms of fear, self-pity, self-delusion, self-seeking. And I can't believe it. I'm actually seeing that the book is true. I'm seeing that I can't do anything about this. And then when I get to that fifth step, and I looked at all my sex relations, and I look at my sexual ideal that I finally put on paper, not my design of Mrs. Right or Mr. Right or my design of my best partner. It's how do I want to show up before God unselfishly? What does that look sacrificially? What does that look like? Everything starts to shift. See, God is so merciful. He's already shifting my attitude about what I think is valuable and what is not valuable. He's shifting everything in me all the way through these steps. And by the time I get to step six, after my step five experience, which is simply, why do I do my step five? I do my step five because I am trying to form a new relationship. I'm trying to have a new attitude. I'm trying to see what's blocked me off from the power of God. That's the purpose of step five. And I find that it's not the surfacey things of defects. It's not the things like anger and gossip and criticism and judgmentalism and being envious and being jealous and all the rest of those things. They're all part of it, but that's the surface. Deep underneath that is fear. God, I'm never going to be okay. You're not going to help me, and I've got to manage myself. I can't access you. I wish I could. Maybe someday you're going to show up, but in the meantime, I've got to take care of business. And so business I take care of, I do. And I create business. I create harm and chaos in people's lives. And I finally see it. And all through that fifth step, I'm asked these five questions. Pat, what do you see? What do you see that you find objectionable? What do you see that you see that you could not have done any better and you are powerless? What do you see in this resentment, in this fear, in this sex inventory that you are still clinging to old beliefs, old systems, old thoughts, and old actions to protect yourself because you think you have to protect yourself because you have not bought into the fact that your Father in heaven protects you? Infinite protection and care, complete love and acceptance, unbelievable tender, gentle, merciful care of me 24 hours a day. And I settle for me trying to be the caretaker of my life. Are you kidding me? So it puts me naturally in the fear. And fear comes out like a caged animal, a rabid dog. And I attack and I bite everybody that tries to get close to me. And I finally get to the point in my step five experience and I go, this stinks. In the Oxford group, they had five steps before the big book was written. They had confidence, which was steps 1 through 3. They had confession, which was our steps 4 and 5 and 6. And then they have conversion, which is steps 7, 8, and 9, because of restitution. And then they have continuance, which was our steps 10, 11, and 12. So confession and conviction are what 4, 5, and 6 are about. 6 is a conviction. It's a step of conviction. It's not a religious term. It is simply an acknowledgement. I am bankrupt. I have nothing to bring to the table that could really solve the deep areas of my life. I'm convinced now that I can't do it. I take that hour in between step 5 and step 6, and I review meditatively. Where do I find objection about this stuff? Where do I still, I'm still clinging to bad behavior and belief systems that are killing me. They're not adding value. It's a futile practice. It's useless. It's harmful. Where do I see I had that I absolutely need the power of God? You know, see, for each one of us on this call, every time I go through a fourth and fifth step, God's calling me someplace deep in my heart to at least one, maybe two issues in my step 4 and 5 experience that says, Pat, I want to recreate you. I want to remake you in this area of your life. Pat, I want to take away that judgmentalism, but it's being driven by fear that you are never going to be good enough. And so you're constantly comparing yourself to others. You're constantly trying to get to be the number one man. You're constantly trying to show off to other people that you are relevant. Pat, give it up. I've got a better way to live. If you would adopt in each of the 7 areas of yourself, all those areas that we do in the third column, an ideal from God's perspective and how God views us. Self-esteem, I am the child of God, protected and loved. Pride, God sees me as perfect and blameless and ready to go according to his deal. I am God's spiritual spearhead, his tool for his ever advancing creation. That's the way he wants us to view ourselves. That's how God views us, right? And it keeps on going. I just lost my train of thought on that, but you know, the point is on that, going into that that review on like an ambition. What do I want out of this situation? Got my train of thought back. ADD is such a wonderful tool. I love it. And then on ambition and pride, what is it that I want? God, I want to be at peace with you. I want to enjoy you. I want your direction. I want your love. I want to experience your love, God. I don't want to have a theory. I want to experience it in a vital new way. How about security? God, teach me that you are my only source of protection. You are the only source that can really deliver in the deep areas of my life that I can't even touch. And how about personal and sex relations? God, let me show up sacrificially. Let me show up being a servant of you and a servant of others and not being a taker. St. Francis of Assisi's prayer, not to be understood, but to understand, not to be loved, but to love, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It means everything. And then how about my pocketbook? God, I have infinite resources. Whatever you design for me to do, I want that to be done. So I'm beginning to think through this ideal of my seven areas under the God's control, no longer underneath Pat's control. And I say, you know what? With conviction, God, I want you. I agree. Once again, I should be fired as playing God in Pat's life. Forgive me for overtaking your job. So this step six experience is nothing less and nothing more than a consideration and meditation on steps 1 through 5 and saying, I can't, God can. And then I start to live out the steps on page 25 and page 51. The great fact of my life is God has entered into it and accomplished things that indeed were miraculous and established a relationship that I couldn't believe. The central fact of my life on page 25, the great fact and the central fact in those two paragraphs becomes a reality. Page 51, the consciousness of the presence of God is today the single most important thing in my life. Why? I'm not trying to turn this into a God talk, but the whole program is about God. My step six says, Pat, put a fork in it, put a stake in the ground, close the door, turn off the lights. From hereafter, you cannot manage and play God in your life. Give it up. Conviction. I give. It's a further surrender. I give. And when ready, I go to the step of conversion. Sam Shoemaker, the Oxford Group, called that the step of conversion. It's where God of the universe has been invited into my life in a deep and effective way, where I say, God, whatever your will is, that's what I'm praying for. And whatever power I need, that's what I'm praying for. The knowledge of your will and the power to carry it out. Sound familiar? That's step 11. And we start experiencing that in step 7. It's amazing. God, whatever the will is for you, you know what I find in my step 6 experience is I start to get conviction around the people I've harmed. And I'm not going into my step 8 and 9 experience because, oh, I just want to be free. I just want to finish these steps so I'm a good little Pat. No, I'm doing it because for the first time in my life, I'm seeing the other human being as a child of God that I have harmed. It's like a baby that I kicked. It's like a dog that I kicked. Like I just torched somebody's life and I want to give back, if I can, what I stole from them. That's my conviction. You know why? Because now I don't want any part of my old stuff. I find it objectionable. I'm not clinging to anything. And by the way, I'm always clinging to something in that step 6 experience. I'm always clingy. I wish I could say differently, but I can't. And the prayer in step six is, God, I'm asking you to help me be willing to be willing. Willing to be willing to let loose of an old belief. You know, my old belief could be this. I'm never to give up judging other people. I'm never to give up my stage character in this arena because I am going to fight to the death to be relevant. God, if I lean into you, that means I have no support anywhere else. I'm jumping from the bridge of faith, the boat on the bridge, from faith to that shoreline, or from reason to faith. And I can't get there in a orderly, confident, cognitive, measured out way. I've got to take a leap. Every time I take a step six experience, I am leaping into the unknown. I have no idea what God is going to remove. I have no idea what having objections to all the stuff that I found in my step four and five experience and the stuff that I was clinging to and powerless. I have no idea what God's going to do, but I am absolutely convinced in faith it's better than anything Pat can do. And I'm telling you, I've been doing this way of work that we're all doing on this call since 2003. I got sober in 2002. And until I discovered this work about 6 months into my sobriety, I was losing my mind. The spiritual malady had me and I had no defense. You take away my addiction, which is my solution on my power, and you don't give me a God-centered, God-powered solution, you have a prescription and a scenario for disaster. So I love step six. With conviction, we go into it and we give this to God. Why? Because God will never drop us. He has never, ever failed. And I am as serious as a heart attack when I say that. God has never failed me, ever. And I love you guys. I know I way past my time probably, but that's what I have for you. So thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Pat. No, you were perfectly in time. That was great.